You're listening to Cat Tales.
Hi, and welcome to Cat Tales. My guest today is one of music's octogenarians. Music icon and MBE Marty Wilde has just made headlines around the world for being the first person in the entertainment industry to receive the COVID vaccine. But he's better known for being the first British artist to achieve the incredibly rare feat of 8 decades of chart success. He's never lost the appetite for songwriting and performing and has just released his first ever Christmas single, a double A-side with daughters Roxanne and Brit Award-winning Kim Wilde, with a sprinkle of festive help from The Shadows' Brian Bennett. So get into the festive cheer and listen to some of the secrets behind Marty's songwriting success and enjoy the magic of the season with Christmas Fantasia and Christmas All Over the World. This is The One with Marty Wilde.
Anything you want to tell me, please feel free.
Well, I was the first one to have showbiz person to have the COVID injection. So that's something which is unusual. I was one of the first in the world, actually.
Blimey, you must be, because it's literally come out a couple of days ago, hasn't it? So how did you get on that list then? Did you bribe someone?
No, I was going to play golf. I was about to hit a shot. And the guy said, he said, have you had the injection? I said, no. He said, well, if you ring Lister Hospital, he said, they're looking for, we use the word volunteers. I said, volunteers for what? So he said, for the COVID injection. I said, I'll volunteer. So I rang, fixed it up, went down there. But in the meantime, my wife happened to mention it to our press officer. And she said, oh, my God, he's going to be one of the first in the world to get it in our industry.
Oh, wow.
So that was it.
Oh, my
and it made the paper. Yeah, it made it got quite a lot of publicity right around the world as well, even in Australia and in Africa, apparently. So.
Good grief. When did you have it?
Last Thursday.
And how do you feel? So we're a few days on, aren't we? So are you feeling okay?
Yeah, I feel absolutely great.
Brilliant.
I feel great. Absolutely perfect.
Well,
no problem at all.
That'll put a lot of people's mind at rest, because there's lots of people who are a bit wary about having it, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there's no logic to that. I mean, all right. So, you know, put it this way. If 5 or 10,000 people had caught COVID, I probably would not have had the injection. But when you look at the millions right around the world, you've got to have it. It's your chance. It's a chance, isn't it? I trust our government, unlike other people's governments around the world who they can't trust. I trust our government, and I trust our health officials. And I think the vaccine, I just knew it was going to be great. And I think also the Oxford vaccine, which is going to come out, I think will be a real winner as well. I have faith in the health experts and not in my politicians, let's put it that way.
Yes, well, that's right. And I think that's all you can do is look towards the experts and hope that they actually, you know, give you the right information, which that's what their field is. And we don't know better than them, do we?
Yeah, no, but I think you've got to grab any chance you can. You've got to grab any chance you can, because it's lethal. I mean, the strain is lethal. I mean, there's millions of people out there this year that are going to be, oh, you know, with no mum or dad or husband or wife, you know, and it's so you've got to grab the chance where you can.
Absolutely. And it's not the first time in history that something like this has come about, is it? You know, and I suppose there was always that scepticism about any kind of inoculation through history when it's first introduced. But now we don't think about smallpox and, you know, diphtheria, do we?
No. There was huge momentum to get it right, I think. And also one of the ladies that lives near me, she works, she has connections with the industry, with that pharmaceutical industry. And she said that they're well on track to get it right. And little tidbits like that I learned from other people who were in that industry. And they said that, yeah, it's going to work. And the Oxford one in particular is supposed to be fantastic.
Yeah.
So let's wait and see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. That's all we can do, isn't it? And hope that the world starts to get a little bit back to normality as we know it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's good to see that you're still doing something, you know, in terms of music, even despite all the lockdown, etc. And a lot of musicians that I've been speaking to recently have been saying it's been good for their creativity. Have you found the same thing?
Absolutely, 100%. Well, I mean, you can't. You can watch television or go for a walk. Going for a walk ain't going to take much more longer than an hour at the most. And watching television is boring. After a while, you know, after you watch sport and a couple of other, one news item, for example, and one, you know, whatever, and then you're just looking at nothing. You can't just sit around. I mean, you can't, I mean, either read a book. I mean, reading is another great way of filling time and being educating yourself. But in my case, it's been pushed me into writing, very much so. It's done me a huge favor in a way. Because I realized I should have been writing for years. I should have written all these years. Instead of wasting my time doing other things, I should have concentrated on songwriting, no question.
I'm sure you haven't wasted your time. You're being very harsh on yourself there, Marty.
Well, I play a lot of golf. Golf takes 4 hours of the day. And, I think in that, I should have played a bit less and spent more time in the studio, because I love studio work. I love it. And I love arranging music. I love when I get a song, you know, I'm always full of ideas, and I always have been. So, it's where I should aim my concentration and my talents, if I've got any at all.
Oh, you certainly have. I mean, 8 decades in the industry. I mean, that is phenomenal. You have to admit.
Yeah, it's a long time. I mean, it really is. I mean, when you go into these things, you don't ever think of things like that. You know, the only thing I thought of when I came into this industry, I was a young man of 17, and I thought, well, you know, I love rock and roll to bits and still do. And I thought then that rock and roll would last. I thought it would. The impact was so phenomenal right around the world. Mm. I thought, well, apart from classical music and jazz, rock and roll has had the biggest impact that there's ever been, you know, and R&B, and, you know, it's covered all those things, R&B and rhythm and blues. So that I did believe in. And I didn't even think of the future. People say, well, did you think you'd last this long? And I never thought of anything. I just love music so much. I just wanted to do it all the time. So, and even if I hadn't have lasted as a star, I would have kept doing it. I would have sung in pubs, or, you know, got a little band together, or I just love making music. I love it.
Yeah, it's either in your blood or it isn't it, really? It's not something you can kind of teach, is it? You know, it's no. It has to come from within.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it's something which, I mean, it's quite remarkable, really. I'm getting on in years. But when I wake up, I could tell you how my day goes. You know, if I get up and I listen to, I turn on the, I've got a station that I get to, and I listen to some classical music. I can listen to Rihanna 1 minute and then Delius the next. Mm-hmm. So I'm all over the place in music, and that's how the morning starts. And then that goes right through the day. Now and again, I'll be listening to snatches of music, or I'm writing songs. And then in the evening, I relax down a bit. But then in the middle of the night, I wake up around about 3 a.m. and I'll be writing again. And I turn my phone on and try not to wake my wife. And I start writing again. It's in my blood.
Wow. 3 o'clock in the morning. That's your inspirational time, obviously. That's great. And what's that? Is that the lyrics that are coming to you, or is it the tune, or a bit of both?
It's all sorts of things. Yeah, it's all sorts of things. But titles and also, yeah, mostly I listen to, I use my iPhone a lot, and I use it to, if I get a snatch of an idea, I record it either with a guitar or just vocally, but most times just with a guitar. And then I'll play those back, and you listen to them and you think, oh, that's rubbish. So you get rid of that. That's rubbish. So, well, that could be interesting. So it carries on like that, you know. But I mean, you know, to get a really great idea, that you need a, that doesn't come easy. You know, those things don't come easy. They come once in a while, and you know it. That's the great thing. You just get that feeling inside this could be something, you know, and I'll carry on with it.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. Because, I mean, you're so known not only for your performance, but also your songwriting, and you've penned a lot of massive hits, haven't you? When you're doing that, then, are you saying that you kind of think, yeah, this could be one, this could be it? Or have you ever been wrong and thought, oh, you know, it's not going to make it, and then it's suddenly gone into the charts?
Yeah, many times, many times. Most of the time, most of the ones you think are going to be smashes, they never are. And the ones that you, I mean, Jessamine, which was one of the nicest songs I've ever been part of. And I had the ideas for Jessamine. I had the title, I had the most of the melody line and a lot of the lyrics. But I thought, well, I'll let it go. And then I had a friend who was a great writer, Ronnie Scott, who had hits in his own right.
Yeah.
And Ronnie said, well, that's a great, let's just finish it off. I said, okay. So Ron added a part to it, which was lovely. And then and we left it. That was it. It was cut on a little tape recorder, all forgotten about. And then the next minute, it was number two in the charts. And I I'd forgotten it, you know. So,
you'd forgotten it. I love that.
I'd moved on to other things. Those things happen, you know. And then other times you get really up for something and it doesn't. It's a great song, maybe, but it doesn't make it. And that's the same with all songwriters, though. It happens all the time with them. But it's what you can never judge what the public are going to like. They have their own. The judge will, the public normally sort it out. But even they miss hits. They do. They miss hits sometimes. And they, because sometimes you find that a song that becomes a hit later on was originally out a few years before or something, or had been around and no one had really heard that it was going to be a hit. But it is songwriting, the public listening to songs and that whole thing is, process is such a fascinating thing, you know. I was watching the program last night on ABBA, and Benny, who composed most of those songs, certainly melodically, I find fascinating, a wonderful, awesome talent, and a very natural, talented man. And so, you know, it's a very interesting subject, the whole thing is.
It is, and I've spoken to a few people about this thing, because it does fascinate me, I have to say. I mean, I've, you know, it's like everybody says, oh, I've got a book in me. Well, everybody's got a song in them. Have they really? It's not as easy as just sort of going, humming a tune. It's how it's composed, isn't it? It's the layering of all the different elements and getting that exactly right, isn't it? To, as you say, capture the audience.
Yeah, it is. And you know, and obviously, even with that, even if you're that talented, you still need, you know, a hell of a lot of luck, a good fortune, you know, because it's a phenomenal subject. And where does it come from? I mean, there's a lovely story of a friend of mine, Bruce Welsh, who everyone knows in the Shadows.
Yeah.
Bruce went to Paul McCartney's flat to meet him a lot of years ago. And Paul said, I've got this song. He said, now listen to it and tell me honestly if you've heard it before. So he played the song to Bruce. Bruce said, it's absolutely beautiful, Paul. He said, it doesn't sound like anything else. So he said, no. And he'd called it, he didn't have a lyric for it. He'd called it something like, I know it was something like fish and chips. That was a kind of, he had some kind of a silly little line, which could remind him of the melody. And he said, the melody came to me in the middle of the night, so he said to Bruce. He said, but I'm sure someone else has written this. So Bruce said, well, I've never heard it. Anyway, that was yesterday.
Oh,
one of the biggest songs in the world.
Isn't that amazing? But, you know, it's strange, isn't it? Yeah, it is absolutely fascinating, because you just wonder whether they are little gifts from above or whether it's just something in your subconscious bubbling to the top and it's always been there. It's a remarkable talent, I have to say.
Yeah, well, a lot of it, I mean, it is, if you're, you know, when you're playing guitar, sometimes you'll hit a chord and then you hit another chord. And the two chords together are so different, so perfect together. Mm. And your melody can come from that, you know, it can be anything. Someone said the other day, they were talking about these plastic tops on bottles. So I can't remember exactly what they said, but there was a kind of an expression they used. So I heard what they said. And I've written it down, and that could, you know, that could well end up as a song title for a song. It happens all the time, you know. You just get ideas.
Yeah, that's
even when you're as old as me.
Oh. Yeah, but all that experience and all that skill comes into play now, doesn't it? Let's be honest.
Well,
and now you've done two Christmas tracks. I mean, all these years, I don't think you've done one, have you? I've been looking back through your hits and your writing, and I can't see anything to do with Christmas. And suddenly, we're gifted with two. What's going on?
Well, what happened was I'd written a song on which is on the album, but it wasn't a Christmas song, but it was quite commercial. And Sam, who is one of the ladies in charge of our publicity department, she said, well, why don't you write a Christmas song? And I said, well, I don't do that, Sam. She said, well, you should think about it. She said, come on. She said, we need a Christmas song. We need a good one. And she's very, you know, she's very persuasive in her own way. And she's such an enthusiastic person. So I thought, all right. So I altered one of the songs that I'd written on my album slightly, to make it much more, to make it a Christmas song. And then I went the whole hog and wrote a new song completely, which was all about Christmas, which was a genuine, what I call a genuine Christmas song. And it came right out of the blue, you know, I mean, these things do. And I used one of my ex-pianists is a classical composer. He writes a lot of classical music. And so I got him to put some string arrangement down from the melody that I had. And then I got Brian Bennett of the Shadows to put drums on it. And I got Roxanne and Kim and I to sing it. And that was one of the tracks. That was a Christmas Fantasia. And that's how that evolved. And that is a pure Christmas song. And it was, I wanted to get across in Fantasia that Christmas is about a child's birthday, which it is. And also the fact that Christmas is for children around the world. And I try to get that and that kind of Christmas spirit in the song. So I hope it succeeds.
Celebrate the life of a child. You tell the child there's a
Hi, this is Marty Wilde, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just absolutely lovely. I mean, that's my favourite out of the two. Am I allowed to choose? Because that is my favourite.
Oh, okay. Of course you can choose, yeah.
But it's hard to choose between them. But the Fantasia one grabbed me straight away because it's so upbeat straight away and you're straight into it. And it does capture all those glitzy little chinkly elements of Christmas. And it's trying to package it in a sound, isn't it? And I think you've really captured that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, it was a pleasure to, you know, as it came through bit by bit, to watch it grow. As you know, I went over to my pianist. I went to his home and I said, "Look, I've got this track." And he didn't have much time himself because he was composing for. He's doing a lot of work for some big company, and he's writing classical parts. So he said, "Well, I've only got about 4 hours." So I said, "Well," very quickly, you know, here's the melody roughly, do what you can in that time. So we did in like a 4 hour period, which it sounds a long time, but it's not when you're writing arrangement. Mm. But it worked. You can hear those strings, you can hear they're classically inspired as well.
Yeah.
And you know, he and then Brian Bennett put this lovely, it's very lovely little rhythm to it. And you know, because he's one of the world's greatest drummers. I think his taste in music is impeccable. So it just kind of worked for me. And I'm so proud of it. I mean, you can never tell with Christmas songs. It might hang around. It might be in 2 years' time. It might be one of the most forgotten songs or one of the biggest Christmas songs around. But whatever happens, I am proud of it. Very proud.
And so you should be. It's lovely. And I'll tell you the other thing that is nice about that is the fact it does actually bring into the fact that Christmas is around about a child's birthday, isn't it? And that, not getting into a religious element, but that is sometimes forgotten, isn't it, in this Christmas celebration of ours these days, which I find that very sad.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm an atheist, which is the craziest thing. I'm an atheist, but I felt very strongly that it is a birthday. It's, you know, we forget. I mean for most guys it's like like we can drink a few extra lagers, there's a packet of crisps, there's watching TV and get a little bit pie-eyed or whatever, you eat your nuts and you have your big amount of turkey or your whatever you're going to eat for your Christmas meal and all the usual things you have, and then you fall asleep in the afternoon. But I've been guilty of that, like all men at some point in my life. But I think it is. I know. As I say, I'm not religious, but it's Jesus's birthday. Well, everyone says it's Christmas. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And also it's for children. You know.
Yeah.
Forget all the the crisps and the pint of lager. It's a child's Christmas time, and it should be that way. That's what I try to get across.
Oh, it's definitely come across in both songs. I mean, and also, you know, Christmas All Over the World is a beautiful track as well, and it's still upbeat as well, isn't it? It captures that excitement, as you say, around the time of year where really it is about children and excitement and fun and frolics, isn't it? Which is lovely.
It is. And I think with COVID this year, it's kind of focused my mind on the plight of people around the world. I watched a program, I watch a lot of TV. Well, I watch news TV sometimes, and I watch Al Jazeera. I watch it quite a lot because I want to get somebody else's opinion on and look and take on the world. And this particular program on Al Jazeera was about refugees. I think they come from either Syria or that part of the world. And they were living in these horrendous conditions with a tent that was in loads of water. So these children were like wet and on blankets. And I thought, this is terrible.
Mm.
And it really sort of hit me home. And I thought, well, let's try and get something nice for children at Christmas. All the ones that we can look after, let's look after them and love them.
Well, love is like a mystery.
loved, and some won't be a part of it. They're scared to be involved, but tonight there's something taking place. I feel it deep inside. Tonight this changes everything, this roller coaster ride. There's a world I can see.
Hi, this is Marty Wilde, and you're listening to Cat Tales.
Now, the two tracks, as you've mentioned there, feature both Kib and Roxanne, don't they? Your beautiful daughters, and don't they look great in that video, I have to say. I love the fact that you've actually got Kim in that little outfit. I mean, surprised she put it on, but she looks wonderful.
Well, I mean, she got me going, she got me dressed as an elf. I don't know what was happening there, but I wasn't very happy about it, I can tell you that.
It suits
but,
you.
She got me going as an elf, and... but it was great working with them. I mean, you know, I mean, you know, Kim is such a wonderful star. She's such a professional girl. She's lovely to work with. She's apart from being a lovely person, she's just lovely to work with. And Roxanne again, you know, Roxanne has been working with Kylie. But Roxanne was a backing vocalist with Kylie for 11 years. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And you know, and she, you know, she's worked with Ellie Goulding and Claire Grogan, and you know, she's worked with great girls and great talented girls. And I thought, well, let's put you out there, kid, because you've got a great voice.
Yeah.
And that's how Roxanne got involved, and it's been a delight. You know, it has. I mean, it's strange. I find with the girls, I'm inclined to get bullied in a way. I can't. if I was with boys, I could moan, you know, or get my own way. But with girls, you can't do that. Because there was a lovely story of Kim and I. There was one day, we were going, this was a few years ago, and we had a broadcast down in London in the West End. And so we had a taxi, a very posh taxi, Mercedes, pick us up. So it picked me up, and then the driver took chauffeur took us across to Kim's house, which is about 10 minutes away. So anyway, I'm sitting in the back, and in comes Kim. She gets in the car. She sits in the back, and the driver it starts to accelerate away. And Kim looks at me and says, "Right," she said, "you've got 4 minutes for ailments." And what she knew was, I was going to say, "Hey, Kim, my back's inflamed." She said, "You've got 4 minutes for ailments."
Lovely. That's wonderful.
And she kept me to it. She wouldn't talk after. She said, "That's enough. Oh, no more. No more."
Oh, it's so funny. It sounds just like my sister and I with my dad. It's the same thing. It must be the daughter-father thing, mustn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Oh, it's a special relationship, though, isn't it? It must be wonderful actually singing with them. You know, the fact that your voices blend so well together, because obviously you're a family, is a bonus, isn't it? But, you know, there is that other chemistry, because it's family.
Yeah, I mean, it can be tough sometimes. I would hate to, you know, you could be, I could imagine arguments coming up. I saw a program, it's on recently, a few days ago, on the Bee Gees, and Barry was the only one still left alive, was talking very honestly, extremely honestly, about how they were so competitive with each other, and each wanted to be a star at some point. While they were stars as a group, they each wanted to do their own, be bigger than the other. He was being very honest. And of course, you know, so some of those things, when you're in a family, it hurts. So if you can have an argument with someone who like is in your group, who's not a relative, that's not nice at all. But if you have one with a family, you're looking in terms of falling out with someone for years and not months, you know.
That's right.
And so it's, it's a two-edged sword. But I mean, I'm very lucky. I've got, two lovely girls, you know, that to work with them especially in this time with COVID, you know, it was great to be near them and to have them near me, you know, it was wonderful.
Yeah, and it brings back what's important, doesn't it? You know, this time that we've been through this year, you think, do you know what is important? It's not necessarily going out and having a beer or a meal anyway, it's actually just hugging a family member, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that lack of physical contact really hits home. It's so impersonal. You know, when I see the grandchildren now, I can't even put my, well, in actual fact, now and again, the little one, he grabs hold of me and I put my arms around him, but you shouldn't really. You're supposed to keep this distance all the time. It's the same for everybody. We're all in the same boat, but it's not very nice at all.
No, so hopefully, you know, at least everybody's going to be able to get into their bubbles at Christmas, aren't they? And hopefully enjoy it as much as they can. And of course, play your music, which I think is perfect. Bit of background for getting that turkey in the oven. Is there any highlights that you think, looking back over those 8 decades, what would be the best moment? Can you pick one out?
I'd have to pick several, because I think the very first time that I had a hit record, which was Endless Sleep, which was in 1950, I think the beginning of 1959 or the end of 1958. I think it was 1958. And I was in a boarding lodgings in the Northeast, and the musician, one of my group, when the group had gone out, and he had... He came in with a musical paper, and he put it onto the table and in this room, because we were having breakfast. And he said, "You're in the charts." I said, "What?" He said, "You're in the charts." I said, "What?" He said, "End of Sleep." I said, "Oh my God." And of course, there it was. It had just come in the top 40, and it went to about number 3 or 4 or something like that, or 2 or 3 or whatever. And eventually, but it was my first major hit. And so that was an incredible memory I'll always treasure. And the other one, of course, was Kids in America, with seeing Kim on television, the very first time that she ever came on to promote Kids in America, which was Top of the Pops. And I knew, I just knew she was going to be a big star. I just knew it. I mean, it was so obvious. And it was weird because I'd never seen her that way. You know, she was my daughter. So I'd never seen her as that kind of of an artist. I'd never seen her like that. She was my daughter, but I couldn't believe what I was watching. And suddenly I realised that she was going to be a big star.
Wow. It was
fantastic.
That's brilliant. And yeah. Of course, she's sung quite a lot of your music, hasn't she? You've written songs especially for her, which have featured very highly in her career, you have to say. So as a team, it looks like that's a great combination.
Yeah, it was. I mean, my son, Ricky, wrote most of the melody lines, and I helped with some of the orchestral ideas, and also I wrote the lyrics. But as a team, and with Kim out front, and my wife had also handled, and she was handling more on the personal side of Kim's career. The whole team combined was quite a strong and a lovely memory as well. It was a great memories come out, you know, tremendous.
Oh, how wonderful. And I'm sure these two tracks will also be a lovely memory, won't they? They will definitely stay around for years because they've got that little magical element for Christmas. So I'm sure they will, Marty.
Oh, I hope so. Look after yourself. Have a lovely Christmas and
yes.
Stay healthy. Stay fit.
Absolutely. And the same to you.
And tell your dad to look after himself as well.
Oh, I will do. Oh, he'll love that. Thank you very much, Marty. That's lovely. Have a lovely Christmas.
All right.
And love to the family. You take care. All Speak right. soon. Yeah. All right.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Cattails.
To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattails.co.uk.